Theatrical Shenanigans with
Rebecca Prue.
Hello there, and welcome along to episode 3 of this third season of Theatrical Shenanigans, and I hope this finds you well wherever you're listening out there. This episode, like all the others, is brought to you by me, your host, Rachel Feeney-Williams, as I guide you through the wonderful world of audio drama with a play written by a fabulous playwright. But I am not alone on my journey. Oh no. Every episode I have a special guest with me, so let's meet our guest for this week, shall we? My guest this week is based on my side of the pond in the UK and is a fresh new face to the world of playwriting, having started in April 2023. Through her journey as a playwright, she's learnt very much about the skills of being a one-man band, being responsible for writing the scripts, sourcing the venue, marketing, selling tickets, and many, many more jobs that have made her shows a success, despite some very busy deadlines. It's a great pleasure to welcome Rebecca Frew.
Hello.
Hi. So my first question is the same with all my guests. How did you get started on your journey as a playwright?
So I'm a very new playwright. I've been doing it for less than a year. I started a course last year in Brighton and literally did that course. So that went on over the summer. And so there was me and there was three other people that did the course. And at the end of it, we all put on sort of a 15-minute show. And then as soon as I'd seen like what I'd written being performed, I was like, oh, I want to see that again. Like, I want to see more. So I decided to just carry on. And so I don't live in Brighton. I live in Worthing, which is a few miles down the road. So, yeah, I've just been putting on shows in my hometown since then.
And what made you decide that was what you wanted to do? Because obviously, educational wise, there's courses for everything out there. Was it something specifically you wanted, or?
So I trained as a journalist, and at the time last year I was working full-time as a fitness journalist. So I've always been into writing, and a play was just sort of another avenue that I've always thought about exploring. I used to print off scripts when I was younger and just sort of read them. So yeah, last year when I saw the course and, you know, I had a bit of time to do it, I decided just to sort of go for it and see what happens. So.
But the journey of self-production, which is what you've done, is always described as one that's long and difficult and a lot of hard work. How's it been for you?
It's been interesting. So when I wrote the play last year, it wasn't a full play. So I came back to my hometown and tried to find a venue where I could put it on. And we're quite lucky we do have like a community sort of venue that I was able to use. And so I put the show on there. And then after that, I was asked, my dad's part of a bowls club and they had just launched sort of a separate venue. And so they asked if I wanted to put the play on there. So I've been quite lucky and I've put on the play locally sort of through sort of people and things that I know. But obviously I'm doing everything myself. Like, I'm sourcing the actors myself. When I booked the second venue, I was asked to put on two plays and I actually only had one fully written. So I just said, yeah, okay, how hard can that be? So I didn't even have a second play when I agreed to put it on. But yeah, I just kind of just say yes to things and then just go for it. And yeah, the hardest bit I thought would be finding actors, but actually there are sort of a lot of actors that are wanting to sort of do this kind of thing, which is lovely. And I think the hardest bit is literally when I have to get up and do an introduction at the beginning of my plays, because that absolutely terrifies me.
You get that a lot with writers. We like to sit comfortably behind the pages of the script. We don't deal with the audience. That's the actor's job.
No, exactly. Yeah, I would never ever be in any of my own shows.
But obviously you touched on this already. You take on so many different jobs in the process of putting these shows on. Obviously you write the scripts, you find the venues, you do all the marketing, you sell tickets. Where do you find time?
Well, fortunately or unfortunately, I got made redundant from my job last year. And I'm quite lucky. I'm in a position now where I've got a part-time job. I'm supported, thankfully, by my partner. So I'm in a very lucky position. And this year we've agreed that I'm going to give this playwriting my absolute all, focus on it for a year. And then hopefully something will come of it. If it doesn't, then I'll be back to full-time work next year.
What would be the dream for you? What would be the next step to getting to where you want to be?
So I've submitted a script to the BBC Writers' Room. They had the applications sort of end of last year. So obviously, ideally, it would be sort of being able to write sort of either for TV shows or perhaps a theatre might pick up one of my scripts. There are some theatres that accept scripts, so I'll be sending some off this year. So ideally, to make some money from script writing and playwriting. That's the ultimate dream.
Yes, it's the ultimate dream for us all, really. And do you have, I mean, obviously, I know you've not been doing this for very long, but do you have a standout moment of so far that's made you kind of think, yeah, this is why I do this side, this is why I made this decision?
I think any time like a show's finished and there's actually been like an audience there like to see it, that's like just hearing people clap and just, you know, at the end of a show, it just makes me really emotional to be like, wow, with the help of actors and everything, you know, this has been put on and this has been performed. This didn't exist, you know, a few months ago or whatever. So I'm always proud when a show's finished and nothing's gone wrong as well.
That always helps.
yeah, there's only been a couple of hairy moments, but that's live theatre and that's part of why I love it.
So now we move on to our playwright and play for this week. Judy Upton is an award-winning playwright and novelist with her latest mystery novel, Brownlow Checks In, It Takes a Dog to Catch a Cat Burglar, recently published by Hobart Books and is available on Amazon. Back to her play though, the piece is entitled In Fact It's a Gas, and Judy describes the piece as so. Sometimes it's the big things in life that matter, like switching your energy supplier. Theatrical Shenanigans presents In Fact It's a Gas by Judy Upton.
Help you?
James Cheel from NFG Energy. We spoke on the phone.
Oh yes, of course. Come in.
Before we go any further, can I just congratulate you on making the right decision? Congratulations, Jade. May I call you Jade?
Well, I'd rather you didn't, as my name is Mia.
Wow, Mia. What a coincidence. My daughter's called Mia. It's a gorgeous name. And, very economical with the letters of the alphabet.
Right.
Mia, you're taking a courageous step here. You've grasped the nettle, stepped up to the plate, gone where lesser mortals fear to tread. And believe me when I tell you with all sincerity, you will be rewarded.
Look, will this take long? I need to go down Lidl before it shuts.
No, no, it's simplicity itself. The whole switching process only takes 17 days.
That long?
It'll pass in a flash, I guarantee. And then your gas and electricity supply and billing will be switched to our company. How does it feel? Monumentous, eh? Take a few moments to savour this once-in-a-lifetime experience while I ready our incredibly straightforward contract for your esteemed customer signature. This is a very expensive pen. Will be a special gift, yours as a token of our appreciation. Before the ink has even dried on the paper. It's a Mont Blanc. Feel that quality.
It says Bic.
Oh yes, you're right. It's a Bic. You're so lucky not every new customer gets one of those. It's part of their new designer range. See that? The black stripe running down the middle?
Yeah, you mean the ink?
That's not ink. Oh no. It's a special stripe designed by Stella McCartney herself. So exciting.
Excuse me, Mr. Cheel.
James.
Can I help you?
Laura Diplock, FRO Power.
Oh, yes, we spoke on the phone.
We did. And Mia. May I call you Mia? I feel so immensely privileged to be invited here today. on the day you make the most significant decision of your humble existence.
She's signing with us, Dippy. No commission fee for you.
Excuse me?
Yes, excuse yourself. Front door's back the way you came.
That's so not going to happen. I take one look at Mia, and as a fellow woman, I just know she's someone who cares, right? For this beautiful planet. And today is the day, Mia, that the environment will give a collective cheer. Yay! Says this flower on behalf of all the flowers on the planet. Mia is about to help save us.
I am?
You are. Because for every metre of cable or pipe we lay, we plant a tree.
A tree? A single twiggy little tree? Our eco pledge means we create a wildflower meadow for each new customer, where we rehome abandoned bees and orphaned butterflies.
Orphan butterflies?
Yes, tiny baby butterflies, who somehow tragically have been separated from their parents.
Oh, so you mean caterpillars?
Oh, no, not caterpillars. Yuck. You won't find any of those in our meadows.
Or on our trees. We spray them all. No nasty caterpillars.
Caterpillars are baby butterflies?
Whatever. Basically, we improve the environment.
That's a big claim, Laura. When your company's power stations still burn fossil fuels. Think of it, Mia. They are destroying actual fossils. Dinosaur bones.
Duh. Fossil fuels aren't dinosaur bones, you himbo. They're oil and
coal?
I knew that.
Anyway, as I was saying, our company is moving towards generating all our energy from sustainables.
Nuclear?
No. Well, hardly at all. We have one or maybe two nuclear power stations, but they're about to
melt down.
Be decommissioned. And we haven't yet decided whether or not to build any new ones.
Well, the government hasn't decided, you mean?
No, it's totally our decision. The Prime Minister needs to feel important, but who really listens to him?
No one. Absolutely no one.
Are you involved in fracking?
Fracking. Bad idea, right? Right?
Or possibly not, eh? If the government are offering you a massive bribe to let a company with no connection to us whatsoever frack under your back garden.
What? Are they planning to frack here?
I don't actually know. How do you tell?
Put it this way, James. Has the earth moved for you lately? Think San Andreas Fault. And does the water coming out your taps glow?
No. God, no, I hope not.
Or does gas come out your water taps? Which we have to charge extra for, naturally. Anyway, why are we talking about fracking? You're a green consumer, right? Now, we've built more wind farms.
Bird shredders.
More RSPB approved wind farms.
Still bird shredders.
Plus, we've erected far more solar panels than NFG.
Oh, yes, solar panels. I've got a friend who's got those on her house.
Then she must be one of our most esteemed and valued customers.
Well, yes. Well, yeah, she was. Well, before her roof caught fire.
Okay, right. Well, I'm sure our insurers are looking into it. Not to admit any kind of liability, of course.
So, let's talk about your tariffs.
Of course. NFG energies are the cheapest on the market.
We're loads cheaper. Our tariffs are a complete steal.
A steal? Only if you bypass the meter. Which I'm not recommending, by the way. It's a criminal offence. Even though we fired all of our meter readers now.
Yes, we give you, the customer, the freedom and responsibility to check your own meters and provide us with the figures. It's so liberating, convenient and empowering for you, isn't it?
And then we ignore your figures and increase your direct debit anyway.
It's a customer's market. Sorry, what were we talking about again?
Tariffs. We were going to compare your tariffs.
No.
Oh, I don't remember agreeing to that.
Well, I can check a price comparison website.
Great idea. Only we measure our tariffs in completely different ways.
Absolutely. There's no comparison. You can't go compare. It's no compare. Oh, could we use that as a slogan without being sued?
Doubt it.
Well, can I just see some figures then?
You wouldn't understand them. The way tariffs work is very complicated.
Hugely. I admit I don't fully understand them myself.
Nobody knows how tariffs are calculated. It's a mystery, isn't it? Like magic.
Okay, then, so what about perks? You know, incentives to buy my gas and electricity from your companies? Well, are there any?
With us, of course, I can exclusively, if you sign with us today, offer 2-for-1 cinema tickets for a whole year.
You get that with us too, naturally. Plus discounts at selected restaurants countrywide.
We also offer luxury spa and hotel discounts. Plus, of course, there's our toy range. This is Voltage the Bear. He's the baby of the family. And, of course, there are 15 to collect.
Live wired the hair. Needs no introduction, of course. You've seen all the commercials. Wasn't the Christmas one moving? I cried every time it was on, which was every 10 minutes. And have you seen the prices the toy range is reaching on eBay? Especially Livewire in his pyjamas. People have been selling theirs to pay an entire year's energy bill. Amazing!
Voltage talks and raps.
Lying about their pricing.
Just press his chest. Oh, and this one seems to need his batteries changed.
So what is your emergency service like? Let's say my electricity goes off. Actually, James, wasn't it your company who charged those folk in the Highlands who were cut off due to those gales bringing their power lines down a hefty reconnection fee?
No, that wasn't NFG. That was our Scottish subsidiary.
Right. And your head office is in England?
No.
It's in the Cayman Islands. Disgusting, isn't it, Mia? His company operates from a tax haven.
And yours doesn't? Then why is the telephone prefix for the CEO the same as for Panama?
Because it means we can better serve our customers. Distance gives clarity. We're not affected by, well, political upheavals or instability in the UK economy.
And because you buy all your gas straight from Russia.
We're not the ones dumping spent nuclear rods at sea, poisoning the dolphins. The baby orphan dolphins.
Oh, don't start that again. It's so obvious. Yes, I noticed the Greenpeace sticker in Mia's car window too. But I wouldn't stoop so low as to...
Orphan butterflies? Ringing any bells, James?
Look, the Greenpeace sticker is in my neighbour's car, okay? Her great gas-guzzling 4x4.
Noted. But what I'm trying to say is that switching will leave you better off. Pure and simple. Ofgem states that the average person who switches energy providers will save a massive £200. Yay!
And people who don't switch are losers.
Total losers.
Okay, so what if I buy gas from one of you and then just electricity from the other?
Won't work. You'll lose your dual fuel discount.
And have to pay a joiner's fee as well as the exit fee to...
James! Shh!
What? What did I say?
Nothing at all. Let's move on.
Exit fee? Did you just say something about an exit fee? What, to leave my current dual fuel provider?
Shush!
Dimwit!
What are you doing, Mia?
Well, I'm Googling exit fees. Apparently there is an energy company exit fee comparison website.
Ah! Don't believe anything you read on there! His company paid for them to skew the figures!
Yeah, well that didn't work out though, did it? Not after your company bought the comparison website.
Hang on a minute. What does this say? NRG and FRO Power are both trading names used by the Complete Monopoly Energy Group.
What?
Let me see that.
Look, it's true. We actually work for the same company. We're colleagues, Dippy.
Yay! Who knew? Feel the love, bruv.
Corporate group hug.
Oh, love you.
Love you.
Mia?
Mia, where are you going? The light's gone out.
Where's she gone? James, can you smell gas?
She's locked the door.
Oh my God, we're trapped. Mia!
Mia!
Mia! Let us out of here!
Help!
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 And
And that is a revenge I think Mia will savour. That was Sarah Wyatt as Mia, Chris Plumridge as James, and Zoe Bark as Laura, with In Fact, It's a Gas by Judy Upton. So, Rebecca, what did you think?
I loved it. Yeah, it's really, really good fun. It wasn't, I don't really know what I expected, but it wasn't what I expected in a good way.
It did have a darkness twist to it that I wasn't expecting when I first started to read.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I was trying to think, like, was that planned, or had she just had enough? And she was like, that's it. Like, I'm out there. Off. Yeah, but yeah, really good fun. I really enjoyed it.
I thought the situation is quite relatable as well, because not even just for people trying to sell you energy service, it's, you know, any kind of door-to-door sales scenario where you've got this person there who just won't leave.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it made me smile, like, just listening to the dialogue and just getting more and more ridiculous of what they were offering. Like the orphan butterflies comment, that was brilliant. And the teddy, what was it, live wire the hair, the toy. So yeah, I thought it was brilliant. Yeah, and I really liked the, because I thought it was all going to be about sort of James and Mia initially in the beginning. And then obviously Laura comes in, and then it becomes about James and Laura's sort of battle between them of who was going to sell this poor woman some gas.
And I love the fact that despite all the silliness and all the comedy that you do get that very kind of serious undertone, particularly later, where you realise that these two big companies who are charging this woman a fortune are both owned by the same giant corporation, and it kind of rang quite close to home in my head.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I thought the same thing. That obviously they didn't even, the two of them, Laura and James, didn't even realise that. But just show there's probably only a few sort of big companies out there all working underneath these little these other little companies, and we don't even know.
No, and it's, you get to that point where you think, well, they own both, so either way they're going to be making the money, and it's going to be her sat here paying these fees and charges, and
that's it. And yeah, everything. Definitely. Yeah,
it's weird though, because I have quite a lot of American listeners and American playwrights, and sometimes I think about whether situations that like this would transfer to America, but then that's why I think the general scenario of door-to-door sales rings true anyway.
Yeah, definitely it does. But it made me smile, because it made me think, because it doesn't seem to happen a lot these days anymore, or not where I live anyway.
No.
But it did make me smile, because I do remember sort of when I was 18 and I just moved into my own flat, it was almost daily I had somebody knocking at my door trying to sell me gas or electric.
These days it's all done by email, so you get like 6, 7, 8, 9 emails a week trying to sell you a smart meter, so it's like it's the in your face version of that.
Yeah, definitely. I kind of miss the door-to-door sales, like, nostalgic really listening to it.
Wait, you do it, and it's also, you have to put more of the effort in with the door-to-door sales, because if you're on the phone or on an email, it's just all written out for them in a script, whereas obviously James and Laura have had to really think about selling this to this woman.
Yeah, definitely. But I'm not gonna lie, if they came and knocked on my door and offered me a cuddly toy, I'd probably sign up.
It's how I compare the meerkats become so popular.
That's
all
it.
It is, yeah, you're the toys, that's all it is.
Yeah,
you almost have this sympathy for Mia being this poor woman stuck in between these two just battling out, and it's almost, it gets to a point where would they have actually noticed had she, well, obviously they don't notice initially, but would they have noticed if she just left?
No, exactly. It sounded like that was a bit of a shock to them, but yeah, I just, it kept going through my head, like, had she sort of planned this? Because obviously when Laura came in, it sounded like she had phoned Laura to be there as well. So there was obviously some sort of planning here where Mia was going to do something, and it wasn't all quite as innocent as it seemed at first.
Maybe she's giving them a taste of their kind of own medicine. Like, she's had enough. She's a woman at breaking point.
Yeah. That's it.
But you can read so much into it. And as I say, it's on the surface, it does look like a bit of silliness with the two of them going back and forth with the more and more ludicrous offers. But the more you look at it, the more seriousness and, as I said, commentary on the world we live in today, then coupled with that dark ending, there's like more depth to it than first meets the eye.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I've listened to it about five or six times now, and every time I've listened to it, I'm like, oh, like, sort of, you can question it in your head and sort of be like, oh, is that a bit darker than what it seems? And I love plays like that that leave me with sort of, it's always left me with a tingly feeling of like, oh, what was actually really going on there?
There's also the ultimate question of, given the amount that they argue and the amount they go back and forth, are James and Laura secretly in a relationship?
Oh, obviously, I'm going to go back and listen to it again now and start thinking about
What is that? They have to appear on opposite sides when, in
Yeah,
fact,
that's
they're
true.
both part of the same giant conglomerate. So it would make
Yeah.
sense for them to be involved, I suppose, in more ways than one.
Definitely. Yeah, I don't think Laura's quite as daft as she seems, is she?
No, I mean, they both, like I said, they both start the same way. You know, this is the best thing you're ever going to do with your life, and
Yeah.
then proceed to embellish and embellish and embellish what they can offer and what they can do for Mia. So they both clearly know exactly what they're doing.
Definitely, yeah, they've had some practice at this, haven't they?
So we are almost out of time. Rebecca, all in all, what did you think?
I just thought it was just a really enjoyable play that you could listen to it again and again, and sort of it can have sort of different meanings sort of when you listen to it. So it's got different depth to it. And I enjoy a play that leaves me sort of questioning what really happened, so I can kind of make up my own mind.
Okay, so that brings us to the end. Rebecca, thank you so much for joining me. It's been a fabulous treat to have you here.
Thank you so much.
And that brings us to the end of our third episode in this, our third season of Theatrical Shenanigans. I hope you enjoyed the play you've heard today and my chat with Rebecca, and then you can join us again in a fortnight when we'll have something a little bit more sinister. If you've enjoyed the show, then as always, you can leave us a like, share, follow, or comment on our Facebook or Instagram pages, or you can pop over to our Buy Me a Coffee page and pick us up a pre-show cocktail. I hope you'll be able to join us for episode 4, but in the meantime, I've been Rachel Feeney-Williams, this is Theatrical Shenanigans, bringing down the curtain and saying, I hope you can join us next time. Theatrical Shenanigans, part of an RFW Scripps production. Found on Spotify, Amazon Music, Podbean, and anywhere else you can find your podcasts. Music is written and produced by Chris Cody.